Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Noah Green of The Pretty Flowers. The group's third full-length album, Never Felt Bitter, is out March 27th. The record touches on issues of mortality, personal resolve, and remaining focused in moments of crisis and anxiety. Green discussed some of those themes, as well as a little bit about his writing process, how his move to the world outside of Los Angeles has impacted him personally and creatively. And at the start of this conversation, we discuss our shared love of The Replacements. That's Noah Green of The Pretty Flowers on Into Music, coming up now. Most importantly, you've got a Replacements poster.
Yes, I do. I'm trying to remember where I found this, but I've been collecting. I have a collection of posters that I have just accumulated from traveling and just living in different places, and I never really had that much space to put things up, and I kind of forgot everything that I had. And just like a year or two ago, when my wife and I moved to this house in Sierra Madre, I went through all my stuff, and I had completely forgotten about this vintage Replacements poster from the Let It Be era. I might have gotten it when I lived in Seattle. That could have been where I got it. But I was glad to have found it and got it framed as soon as I saw it.
So they must, they're on the wall. They must have been a touchstone band for you.
Yeah, they were. And I'm trying to think. I mean, I remember getting BMG and Columbia House were big touchstones for me. I didn't have any older siblings or like a lot of cool older friends to kind of guide me with music. But Columbia House and BMG, I think especially, I think the Replacements, Tim was the, and Pleased to Meet Me were ones that I got from there. And I didn't really respond to them that, like I loved the singles that I knew, but then a lot of the other album tracks, it took a while to kind of come around to those. Like I think the Kiss cover kind of really threw me off, and as you know, like a 14 year old or something, it took a little while. But I mean, I always loved the singles, and and then when I got the All for Nothing, Nothing for All compilation, that was the thing that I really, I listened to that to death. Like, and it was just like, it was such a treasure. I mean, there's so many songs I hadn't heard before because I didn't dive super deep into their catalog, and that's only their major label stuff. So that it wasn't, I still hadn't really even heard the Twin Tone stuff, but even that whole CD of B-sides was just, it was just so fun, and like, there's just so much good stuff on there, and just like their personality, they're just, you can hear their personalities in the songs. And I loved that. And I remember bringing that with me to when I moved up to Seattle and just playing that at work all the time. I worked at this photography studio, and I was like, in this tiny room processing film, and it was like, they did portraits, like family portraits and stuff. So families would come in, and they would do these family portraits over the weekend, and then throughout the week we would be processing all of the films and printing them out in like the big, you know, 8x10s or like bigger things. And so I would be in this little room that was like partially a dark room. I it would just be have a CD player, and I'd be listening to music all the time. And that was the Replacements, All for Nothing, Nothing for All was a really big. I was listening to that all the time, and I'm not really a proponent of compilation CDs. I mean, I'm really just like an album guy, and I'm but for but those that album was really huge for me.
Yeah, well, I'm with you when that collect the B-side stuff for me, because there's a couple of things on there where I'm like, that didn't make it onto a proper album. What?
I know. And it was like the Replacements became one of the, like, I've been a record collector for, I mean, since high school, since around that time. And then the Replacements was like the first band that I was like, I'm gonna try and collect every bit of Replacements vinyl that I can. Like, it was like Replacements and Tom Waits. And back in the, 98, 99, that was kind of like something that was feasible. And it was like maybe you weren't going to find it in the wild, but you could find it in like eBay was kind of a thing where you could start filling in gaps with stuff that you just realized you would probably never find. Yeah, so those the Replacements, I think I pretty much have every like all the Replacement stuff on vinyl, of like the early of like original pressings and 7 inches and everything. So I've gotten I that collection is pretty much complete.
Speaking of that compilation, All for Nothing, Nothing for All, you've got Date to Church with Tom Waits on it.
Tom Waits, yes, I was gonna, yes, that was great. And you hear Paul Westerberg doing his Tom Waits gruffy imitation, and just so much fun.
In your band, one of the things that I detected in this release was, or in these songs, was also this kind of Beatle-y thing. But it was this Beatle-y thing where I wanted to ask you about this because you've got some fast stuff, but it's like the tempos don't go crazy, but they're just kind of at that breaking point. And I was like, that's like a Beatles thing where it's like it's almost, but it hits right at the right place.
It's like the Beatles edging their way into punk
Yeah.
or something.
I don't know that that was necessarily intentional, but that was one of those things where I was like, okay, these songs, if they were just a fraction faster, a fraction slower, that kind of thing makes a difference.
I think tempo does definitely make a difference. I do demos at home, and I have a pretty unsophisticated drum machine. So I have like it's really like a pedal. It's called a Beat Buddy, and it's an early version too, so there's not a lot of options to it, and it's just like 4/4. It's like it and then it can do like a swing thing, and it can do like a country thing, and it's pretty silly. But it kind of gets it, I try and make sure that I don't have a lot of control over redoing things, and kind of with the recording software that I have. Like I have a thing called Aspire, which I don't think they really use anymore, but it's not really, I think it kind of went out of production, but it's a little, but I have this, it's a box, it's like a four digital four track, or I think it's a four track. So it went once I put like the drums is something that I have a little bit of control over, where it's just like that's going to be the bed of the song. And then I usually will do bass over that or guitar over that. But as far as like arranging, I kind of and I'm like working it out as I'm recording it, so I can't really go back and edit things. Like if I want to move a section to another section or extend a bridge or something, I can't really do that. I kind of just have to go with what is my first instinct for the tracks that I'm putting down. And then I'm kind of locked into that And then we can arrange things after that. Usually, the bit once I'll like share it with the band, and the band kind of has more ideas. But it's really a way to kind of get just the main idea down to be able to share it. But there is no like the Beatles thing I had not heard before. That's flattering. But the yeah, tempos. Like that is one thing that I kind of I hear where it's like this is like the speed of the song that it should be. This is the tempo that it should be, and that can change a lot. But I am pretty conscious of trying to at least when I'm fiddling with the drum tempo, that is kind of I'm focused on that to get it right.
In a lot of ways, that's where the heart of the song is. I mean, yes, there's chords and lyrics and stuff, but that, I don't know, to me, that's just kind of like it's gotta hit me there, you know?
The feeling of the song is really just is starting with where the tempo is, and like it encourages what happens with the rest of the song, definitely for the tempo. And then you also like I'll do a demo, and the tempo will be like I will recognize that the tempo is like not right, or Jake, who does a lot of the arranging and production within the band, or Sean playing drums, will just be like, this feels like this should be something else. This should be faster, or we should pull this back a little bit. But yeah, that is a very significant part of the songs and the songwriting process, is nailing the tempo.
And we are in the weeds. So, well, but it's interesting to me too that you're working on, with gear essentially for the demos that is much of a much earlier era in some ways, because you're not working with like a Logic rig or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, because it's really like the early demos are not necessarily super important. It's really just like to get the idea out, and I didn't want to be locked into a computer to just like be. I mean, this thing is a digital computer, but it's something I can just plug an instrument into the back of, and it's just like a little pod, and I can just go from there. There's an app on my phone that I like can control things with, but it just gives me a lot of freedom to not just be like at on my computer while I'm doing it.
So you mentioned earlier that you had kind of moved, and I'm guessing that that move kind of happened between the last record and this one.
I was living in Koreatown, which is just like mid-city Los Angeles, and it's just a really busy, bustling part of the city. There's just like a major thoroughfare of Wilton Place, but just like right outside of our apartment. And it was really busy and really like really loud, but it's just like one of those things that you just kind of really get used to. Like I would go on walks and stuff, and it was like a really nice flat land to just walk around, and there's just like a lot of you see just a lot of stuff, like we were kind of like right near Wilshire Park, which is a very affluent like area where I think the mayor's residence is right there. But then it's just like Wilshire Boulevard, where there's a lot of homelessness. There's just a lot of like everything within a mile square mile radius. And we were there for like 13 years, and I really, really liked it a lot. It was a really great neighborhood. We had great neighbors, and but I think there was a lot of like psychic kind of, I don't know about damage, but there was just a lot of just being in that kind of like intense environment all the time, like that I just had kind of not even really realized that I was living in this pretty intense environment all the time, just with noise, just with l really just loudness, and commuting all the time from there. it kind of took being in another in this other environment where I'm like in a in the canyon of Sierra Madre, which is just east of Altadena and near Pasadena. It's just very quiet, and it's I had never really I just had not lived in a in an area where there was so much like peacefulness in this in my surroundings. And we're just like right by this by Mount Wilson, which is like this beautiful hiking trail that goes up to the observatory. And it's just, I don't know, I think mo thinking about moving over here was a, I was just thinking, will I even like, will I even like it? Will, is it like I just, I was so used to being in the environment of Koreatown, and I was just so used to it. And I did love it. But once we made the move here, it was pretty quick that I was just like, wow, I can see the stars every night. I can see there's just like fresh air. It's like just the, like the peacefulness of it, and the and just like the great community that's here. It just really made a difference, and it inspired. I felt like songs were kind of coming in a in from a little bit of a different place, and it was like kind of recognizing this experience of being here and like appreciation of just be, of just being in a new a different environment, and like in and just appreciation of like the peacefulness that I was feeling being here.
Yeah, I wondered about that because, yeah, moves I think tend to do have that impact. And if you're moving from a really noisy place, I mean, you talked about the stress. I mean, that just the noise after a while is just not good for your nervous system. And it's like, I mean, I live off the main interchange through Wichita. There's a sound wall there. But sometimes I feel like I'm like in a country cottage or something because it's so quiet compared to other parts of the city. And in fact, this morning I woke up and it was raining outside. I was just like, I'm so thankful it's so quiet here.
I know. Yeah, I think that I'll just go out at night and just like look at the moon and the stars, and I'm just like, it's so clear. I like the clarity of the sky is just like it's amazing. I'm just it's like I will I'm just so grateful to be able to see that, and to like just to be here is great. And it's and this the community here is just is so kind, and like it's it people are so great and friendly, and like we were able to film a video a few weeks ago for our song To Be So Cool, and we were just like we were the video was us like in the back of a pickup truck you know like no seat belt or whatever, but we did we filmed like 20 journeys like that were just like 5 minute trips up this hill in Sierra Madre, and there's a lot of people were around while we were filming it, but I mean we did this we filmed basically from like 11 in the morning to like 6 p.m. and we there, nobody cared, there was no hassling, there was like and it was just like if I film we filmed this anywhere else people would call the cops, people would like cops would like make sure we had a like would ticket us for not having a seat belt. It was just very nice. We were just getting like thumbs up from people, and people were just thinking it was funny that we were they could tell that we were filming something. Yeah, it was just it's really cool.
Wow, that's amazing. I was gonna say, like in LA, I mean, how heavy would the fines have been for filming without a permit?
Yeah, that too. That would have been pretty heavy, and I pretty immediately someone would have called the cops or something, or had a some kind of complaint or yelled at us to stop.
I wanted to ask you about Thief of Time, which opens the album. And that just kind of struck me on a lyrical level, even just the title itself and the energy that it brings us into the album with. What can you say about that one?
Thief of Time, it's I mean, it's about loss, and it's about, I mean, loss of pets. It's about loss of friends. It's just about kind of recognizing time on Earth not being infinite. And like I think the older you get, the more that becomes apparent. And it's like it just kind of struck me. I've had the loss of a lot of some friends, and specifically a friend at the end of last year who we wound up dedicating the album to. But it's just recognizing that there's a lot in life that is just not fair, and it's just but it is, that's what life is something that you can't control. These things are going to happen, and these things have, loss and death have always happened, and they've happened to good people, and they've happened to bad people. And I mean it's very obvious, but it's just it's sometimes things happen where it just really clicks, where this life is not about you, and these natural progressions of life are, they're just going to happen, and it's kind of just it's a matter of time. But yeah, it's the thief of time is kind of it is like the Grim Reaper, I guess. But there's some positivity, and there's an aspect of pulling together in it too, I think. It's not a resigning to like being upset or sad about it. It's kind of like it trying to recognize you have no control, and also kind of controlling that you have the freedom of not having control in of things.
Yeah. So I'm 53 and I work with one of my best friends, and about every 2 weeks I feel like I'm walking out to his desk and saying, "Hey, I just got a text, about so and so." And there was one recently where the last time I had seen this guy was at another friend's memorial service. And because I gave the eulogy at that service, and I was saying, "Hey, everybody, let's take this opportunity to reconnect and stay in touch." And then I didn't. And so it's like you learn that lesson of like you really gotta do that because you don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I had a similar experience. I mean, a friend of mine who had a lot of health issues, and he struggled a lot with alcohol abuse. Things just got really bad, and he passed away in November, or in late November, early December. And we had a memorial for him back in my close to my hometown in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it was like a high school reunion for the people that I wanted to see. It was like, I mean, all of us coming together to just remember our friend. And this is somebody I knew since, I mean, it was just very, very important to me from like sixth grade. And it's just, we connected with all these high school friends, and just being together, like for all of us, in memory of our friend, it was just a really important cathartic thing. And it just, yeah, I mean, there's more of that is coming. And just life is just so unpredictable and anarchic, and it's like it's just unpredictable. And there's just, I keep saying, this feeling of like not having control, or just like wanting to have control of things, and you're just you can't. There's just no there there's just it's a hard thing to realize, and it's difficult anyway you look at it. But just the love that we all felt for our friend, and the memories, they live on, and they're kind of with us, with our memories of them, and our like the happiness that they did bring bring to our lives, and it's that's all important stuff to remember. I mean, these memories are real, and they stick with you, and it's just important to kind of not forget about those things.
So I wondered if that was some of where like the urgency in the record comes from, the sense of like, time is ticking.
Yeah, it is. I struggle with anxiety a bit. I mean, it's hard not to. I think it's like it really increased a lot in the last I don't know, t 8 years in the world. And it's hard to be, it's hard to be a citizen of the world. It's very, there's a lot of pressure and anxiety that just comes with being affected by what's going on in the world. And I think everyone in the band is very aware and affected by these things. And the music kind of just reflects like a lot of tension and anxieties, but I at least I hope that there is a sense of hope and positivity that kind of comes through. I mean, I try not to be a negative person, as hard as that is to resist and to kind of fall into. There it's it, I think it's trying to work out the negativity of and anxieties and these stresses kind of in the songs. And I think when we come together as a band, it really is, there's like this camaraderie that, I mean, we just love playing music with each other. And it is kind of, we can kind of create this little world for ourselves. Like when we're practicing, when we're playing live, there's something there that really is tangible and kind of matters. But I try to have some kind of hope in the songs and not get bogged down with things. I mean, there's in these songs, I'm trying to kind of work things out with myself. I'm kind of trying to work things out with the world and my place in the world and the futility that we feel of just, I mean, what does it mean to be in a band? What does it mean to just like be upset about things, and what are we actually doing? It's all that. But we do try and keep a positive outlook on things.
You've been listening to a conversation with Noah Green of the Pretty Flowers. The band's new album, Never Felt Bitter, is out March 27th via Forge Again Records. You can learn more about the band via their official website, theprettyflowers.net. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. And find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. We also like to remind you at the end of every episode that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.